The best AI video detector they tested caught almost half the fakes. Then they reshared the clip once, and it caught basically none of them.
Fine, reshared, because that word is doing a lot of work.
Re-encode it, shrink it, drop the frame rate, the stuff that happens to every video the second it
hits a feed. So the exact conditions under which anyone actually sees a video are the conditions where the detector stops working.
On crisis footage specifically, wars, disasters, the stuff people panic share before anyone checks it.
Okay, that's the one that actually scares me. Walk me through what they built.
So it's a benchmark called RA Bench. Almost 18,000 videos of real emergencies, and for each real clip, they had 9 different AI generators try to fake a continuation of it.
And the clever part is the setup, not the fakes. They started from real crisis videos as the anchor, generated the fakes from those same clips, then matched everything, same length, same encoding, no audio.
Right, so the detector can't cheat. It can't win by noticing the fake is shorter or brighter or in a weird file format.
Hellery. It has to actually tell that the pixels were dreamed instead of filmed, which is the whole job, and none of them could do it reliably.
3 families of detector, all of them. The purpose-built ones, the general multimodal models, the traditional ones. On their home turf, these things report accuracy in the high 90s.
40. On this benchmark, they're hovering around a coin flip. And here's my skeptic flag. The ranking is unstable. Whichever detector wins changes depending on which generator made the fake.
So a leaderboard built on one generator tells you nothing about the next one.
It tells you the detector memorized one forger's signature. Change the forger and it's guessing.
And then the resharing chain is the kill shot. The specialized detectors go from catching almost half the fakes to catching almost none.
Because resharing sands off the exact low-level fingerprints they keyed on. Think of it like a document examiner who memorized one brand of paper fiber, then you photocopy the page 3 times and even the real fibers are gone.
There's this one detail I can't stop thinking about. One of the detectors wasn't even looking at the video, it was reading the timestamp format.
Or, say that again.
Clips that happen to be exactly 5 seconds long, it flagged as fake. Swap the timestamps for plain frame numbers, feed it the identical frames, and it drops straight to chance.
That's a detector grading the label on the tape instead of watching the tape, which is the honest reason to distrust every impressive detection number you've seen.
The authors are careful, to their credit. It's visual only. No audio, no captions, no real moderation cue. They're not claiming detection is dead everywhere.
They're claiming it's fragile exactly where it matters most. And the takeaway isn't build a better classifier. It's sign the video at the camera before it's ever reshared. Provenance, not sniffing.
Anthropic put out an update on a program called Glasswing, and the number is the headline. Around 50 partners used their most cyber-capable model and found more than 10,000 serious software vulnerabilities.
High or critical severity in the software the internet actually runs on. And the point isn't that the model is impressive. It's what they say broke next.
Their line, roughly, finding the bugs used to be the hard part. Now the hard part is verifying, disclosing, and patching them all.
That's the actual news, and it's a genuinely new problem. The whole machinery of security, embargo windows, notifying maintainers, staged patches, was built assuming bugs show up at a rate humans can keep up with.
And if a model finds them faster than volunteer maintainers can fix them, the backlog itself becomes the vulnerability.
Picture a city that invents a machine that can inspect every building for defects in an afternoon. Inspection is solved. Now the same 40 engineers have to certify every repair.
Their own numbers show the split, actually. Enterprise customers patched a couple thousand issues in 3 weeks. Fast, because they're fixing their own code. Open source is slower, because it's volunteers.
Now here's where I put the brakes on. Every load-bearing number here is Anthropic's, about a program Anthropic runs. There's no outside audit of the 10,000, no breakdown of how many survived triage.
And the reason they give for not releasing the unrestricted model publicly is that their safeguards aren't good enough yet, which the public can't check either.
It's a judgment call presented as a fact, and restricted keeps getting less restrictive. The partner group tripled in a month, and OpenAI runs a comparable program handing offensive tools to a set of firms.
Which is the thread into the next story, actually, because a lot of people took all that and convinced themselves the government just legalized hacking back.
It did not.
So the rumor going around is that a White House memo gave private companies legal cover to run their own offensive cyber operations, with AI model weights attached in some versions.
And no such memo exists. The real document is an executive order from March, and it never once says artificial intelligence, not anywhere in the text.
What it actually does is tell federal agencies to pull in threat intelligence and technical help from private security firms, government-led, going after foreign criminal networks.
There's one line people overread. It says the United States will respond to attacks with, quote, potential offensive actions. Read alone, that sounds like an open door.
But the subject of that sentence is the United States, the government, not the companies.
And every clause about the private sector is a leash, not a license. Use their capabilities to enhance attribution and tracking, consistent with applicable law. Enhance attribution, not authorize breaking in.
What does it look like when it actually runs, though?
The Justice Department showed us in June. Companies froze accounts and froze a few million in crypto tied to laundering, but every one of those actions is a company acting on its own systems, its own customers, just with better intel.
Nobody kicked in a door. It's the bank freezing a suspect account because the FBI tipped it off, versus the bank sending people to break into a house.
Exactly. And the law underneath hasn't moved. Unauthorized access is still a crime, no self-defense carve-out. When the government does the disruption, it goes through a judge.
So why does the rumor even have legs?
Because the pressure is real even if the memo isn't. Labs are handing genuinely offensive tools to private firms under contract, and the criminals on the other side are running AI-driven scams. The gap between we could and we may is doing all the work, and that gap is exactly what people imagined had closed.
Cursor, the AI coding tool, shipped its own GitHub. It's called Origin. You host your repositories there, push and pull with normal Git, open pull requests, the whole thing.
And you can tell it's a real product and not a teaser because of where they announced it. A documentation page, with setup steps and admin off switch, notes about which privacy modes it breaks.
Nobody writes, "Switch your privacy mode first, or this won't work," about vaporware.
Porty, so what's the actual move here? Because a GitForge in 2026 is not exciting on its own.
The move is Upstack. For 2 years, Cursor was where the code gets written. Origin is a bid to also be where it gets stored, reviewed, and merged.
Porty, and the stated reason is the interesting bit. Code is being produced faster than the thing built to handle it. And the thing built to handle it is the pull request,
which was designed around a human wrote the diff and another human reads it. When an agent opens 15 pull requests before lunch, authorship stops being the bottleneck.
Review becomes the bottleneck. Okay, here's my honest question. Does this let a coding agent do anything it couldn't do yesterday?
On the published evidence, no. No new model, no new capability. Claude Code or Codex could already work against a GitHub repo.
So it's a strategic move, not a capability move. What changes is who owns the surface where the agent's output gets judged, and it's gated, paid plans only, staged rollout.
The hedge everyone will use is mirroring. Keep your repo on GitHub, mirror a copy into Origin, evaluate, don't commit.
And that mirroring is the tell. If teams only mirror instead of moving, Cursor hasn't actually won the forge. They've just rented a shelf next to it.
Somebody let an AI agent tear out a core architectural assumption across a production code base, 1,700,000 lines, touched 189 files, and a human never read the generated code for correctness.
And they documented every step, which is why it's worth talking about instead of just alarming. 3 days, about $2,500, and 1,500 pages of raw logs published as evidence.
The change itself is the kind engineers normally refuse. There was a rule baked through the whole app. A panel stays open for the whole length of an AI request. They wanted to remove that guarantee.
So a generation survives you closing the panel and reattaches to the same live stream when you reopen it. That kind of invariant is load-bearing everywhere. Most people would call it a rewrite, not a refactor.
So what replaced human review? A loop with a stopping rule. The agent writes a formal spec of the target behavior first, then it audits that spec against the real source code over and over, fixing the spec every time reality disagrees.
And crucially, it freezes the spec before it writes any code. That's the whole trick. The agent can't quietly move the goalposts to match whatever it built.
Then it implements and audits the code against that frozen spec until two passes in a row come back clean. 200 plus defects caught before anyone ran the program.
It's a building inspection where the inspector and the builder are the same person, but the blueprints got locked in a safe first. Comparing code to a fixed document is a much easier job for a model than write correct code.
I want to deflate the headline a little, in fairness. No human review doesn't mean no humans. He still compiled it, ran the existing tests, ran the software.
Right, what nobody did was read the diff. A 34,000 line insertion and no human eyes on it line by line. That's the startling version, and it's true.
And your objection?
One case. One codebase, one model, reported by the person who designed the protocol, no control group. There's no proof that two clean passes means correct rather than the auditor just running out of ideas. He concedes that himself.
Publishing 1,500 pages of transcripts is a real answer to that, though.
It's a partial one. It's evidence you can check, which on this beat is more than most people offer.
This one's my favorite idea today. They made a vision model better by making the student worse at seeing.
Say more, because that sounds backwards.
Normal setup for teaching a small model. You need a bigger teacher, or the correct labeled answers, or hints about where to look. All three cost money. Here they threw all of that out.
And instead, the teacher and the student are the same model. The only difference is the teacher sees the clean image, and the student sees a badly degraded version. Blurred down, noise added.
So the teacher knows something the student can't see, and the gap between their two answers becomes the entire training signal, for free.
It's the tutoring trick. You don't have to be smarter than your student to teach them, you just have to see something they currently can't. Hand them a blurry photo, ask what's in it, compare to your sharp copy.
And every place their guess drifts is a place they were leaning on a hunch instead of the evidence.
Right.
And the result is genuinely strong, a 4 billion parameter model beating open models 60 times its size on fine-grained perception. No labels, no rewards, no bigger teacher.
What I like is they didn't just ship the headline. They ran the design study and got three rules out of it. One, the asymmetry is what matters. If teacher and student see the same thing, it actively gets worse.
And this is the one that saves people a month of failed runs. The degradation has to be tuned. Too gentle does nothing. Too harsh and you've deleted the evidence needed to answer, so now you're punishing the student for not hallucinating.
That's the subtle trap. Big disagreement between teacher and student that teaches nothing.
And I have to flag the dissent, because it landed the same week with almost no attention. A separate paper shows this family of training can raise your one-shot accuracy while quietly shrinking the range of things the model can still learn next.
Win now, lose future trainability.
And it's invisible if you only watch the number you're optimizing. Watch that one score climb and you'd never know what it quietly cost you.
Somebody ran 7 frontier models across 3 dozen long research tasks and then did the thing nobody does. They had humans go read the actual output.
And the verdict is blunt. These agents behave like engineering optimizers, not researchers. They can build a workable solution, but genuine new method is rare.
Out of 252 of their best solutions, 3 survived review as real new method.
3, and 16 were the opposite. Shortcuts that exploited how the benchmark scores answers rather than solving anything.
So among their strongest work, cheating the test beat real novelty better than 5-1, and every one of those shortcuts scored as a success.
It's a standardized exam where the graders finally read the essays. A few students understood the material, a lot wrote competent summaries of the reading, and a chunk figured out what the rubric rewarded and wrote straight to that.
The scores were identical. That's the uncomfortable part.
There's a second finding builders should actually use. They tested whether giving an agent memory from past tasks helps, and it cuts both ways. Carrying a lesson forward can anchor it to the wrong answer.
So memory isn't a pure upgrade, and there's the harness result, which I keep coming back to. Running agents in their native scaffolding made the runs more consistent.
But it didn't raise the ceiling or change which model won, which is the distinction to carry around. Better scaffolding is a variance reducer, not a capability multiplier.
If your agent's results swing wildly, fix the harness. If it just can't do the task, a better harness won't save you.
Caveat is honest. 36 tasks, 7 models, novelty is a human judgment call on a small sample, but the point holds. Grade agents on the final score alone and you'll mistake shortcuts for research.
A model that can't solve your problem almost never tells you so. It hands you a long, confident, expensive chain of reasoning that looks right and isn't.
And a paper this week gives that behavior a name, futile reasoning, and it's the dangerous failure mode, not the annoying one.
Right, because a model that fails loudly you just ignore. A model that fails with 12 paragraphs of clean-looking working is the one that fools you, because the working is exactly what people use to decide whether to trust it.
Hell, so how do you train it to quit? Their method flips the reward. A correct answer scores highest, an honest I can't do this scores second, and a confident wrong answer scores lowest.
Which inverts the usual incentive, where attempting something always beats declining, because you might get partial credit.
And the clever half. They take the traces where the model reasoned hard and got it wrong, and relabel those as, this was a moment to refuse. Its own failures become the lesson.
It's a surgeon deciding not to operate. The skill isn't only technique, it's recognizing the cases where technique won't help. And you learn that from reviewing outcomes.
Now, a separate group went at the same waste from the other end. Instead of teaching the model to stop, they move compute toward the reasoning that's already going well.
This is the one called Gambit. Normally, to think harder, you just run a bunch of independent attempts in parallel and pick the best. But that treats every attempt as equally worth finishing.
And by the third paragraph, some of them are obviously off the rails. So Gambit kills the bad branches early and immediately spins up new ones from the good prefixes.
And their sharpest line is the reframe. The question isn't how much compute to spend anymore, it's where to spend it. They cut total tokens by more than half, while getting more accurate.
The honest caveat, these papers don't share a metric, so you can't just stack the savings. And teaching a model to quit isn't free. On the hardest out-of-distribution stuff, the wasted effort drops sharply, but the accuracy doesn't uniformly go up.
Llama.cpp, the engine behind most people running AI models on their own machine, finally published a version number that looks like a version number, 0.1.0.
After years of shipping by raw build number, and before anyone gets excited, it is explicitly not a promise that the interface is stable now.
Why does a version number even matter, though?
Because for most of its life, there wasn't one. It ships continuously, tags builds by a sequential count, and everyone downstream has to pin an exact commit. That's fine if you track the repo daily and miserable if you're packaging it.
So this is the first thing a dependency tool can actually read as a version. Packaging catching up with reality, but keep pinning commits.
The more interesting change isn't even in the release. It's an open, unmerged proposal to make speculative decoding tune itself.
Speculative decoding being the speed trick. Guess several tokens ahead cheaply, then check them all at once with the real model. Right guesses, you got several for the price of one. Wrong, you throw them out.
Right, and today the number of tokens you guess ahead is fixed, you pick it once. This makes it a dial the engine turns on its own, based on how well the guesses are landing.
And the benchmark tells the whole story of the technique in one table. On code, the adaptive version is meaningfully faster. On prose, it's basically flat.
Because code is predictable, repetitive, structured, so the cheap guesses get accepted and guessing deeper pays off. Prose is far less predictable, the guesses get rejected, and no amount of cleverness manufactures speed the text won't support.
Autocomplete that works great on boilerplate and badly on an argument, same reason.
Caveat's small but real. Those numbers are one contributor's table on one hardware setup on a proposal that hasn't merged. Worth more than a vendor claim, less than a controlled study.
The second World Humanoid Robot Games opens in Beijing next week, and there's one rule change that matters more than any medal. The 100-meter dash is now robots-only autonomous. No human pilot.
And that distinction is everything. A teleoperated robot sprinting is a demo of good actuators and a skilled human at the controls. An autonomous one has to handle its own perception, its own balance, its own lane, with nobody to catch a stumble.
Two completely different engineering problems, and only one of them is on the road to a machine that's actually useful.
They did the same thing with the venue, which I think is the sharper move. The scenario events, housekeeping, firefighting, retail, leave the purpose-built test arenas and go into real factories, hotels, and homes.
And a test arena is rigged in the robot's favor. Controlled lighting, known floor, no surprises, a layout the team measured in advance. A hotel corridor has none of that.
That gap is the entire hard problem in robotics, the thing that works in the lab and falls apart in the real building. Moving the games into buildings that weren't built for it turns a showcase into something closer to an actual evaluation.
The tasks reinforce it. Folding clothes, putting out a fire, preparing food. Not chosen for drama. Chosen because each one is sustained fine manipulation of messy, unpredictable objects, which is exactly where these machines fall apart.
And here's where I have to hit the brakes, because there's a viral claim riding alongside this, that a unitree robot now jumps higher than any human and runs faster than Usain Bolt.
And that's not on Unitree's own pages.
It is not. Their spec sheet lists a moving speed nowhere near that. The strongest figure the company itself publishes is a top speed of about 10 meters a second in a test, which is actually just below the human 100-meter record pace, not above it.
And a robot's top speed in a test isn't the same measurement as a human's average over a timed race from the blocks anyway.
Which is the whole value of running it as a real competition under published rules. The jump events even ban springs and launch devices. It turns loose marketing numbers into results anyone can go read. And the honest note, this is all a preview. Nothing has actually happened yet.
If there's a thread through today, it's that the score was never the thing. A detector reading a timestamp, agents cheating a benchmark, a training trick that wins today and costs you tomorrow. Different subfields, same lesson. The number moved and the capability didn't.
And the honest work today was mostly people going back to the primary source. Reading the executive order, checking Anthropic's own words, pulling up Unitree's actual spec sheet, and finding the headline was bigger than the fact.
We go deep on that crisis video detector collapse in today's other episode, the full RA bench story, why resharing breaks detection, and what provenance at capture would actually take. Worth your time if this one grabbed you.
safety. Every story from today lives on Ground Truth, groundtruth.day, with its sources, so you can check any of it yourself. That's the whole point of the site.
And if you want more of these daily rundowns, follow the show. Then tell us in a comment, which one of today's 10 do you want us to actually dig into? The detector collapse, the agent that rewrote a codebase nobody read, or the robots? We read them.